Random House Audio presents Nocturnes, Five Stories of Music and Nightfall by Kazuo Ishiguro. Read for you by Mark Bramhall, Simon Vance, Kirby Hayborn, and Lincoln Hoppe. Crooner, read by Mark Bramhall. The morning I spotted Tony Gardner sitting among the tourists, spring was just arriving here in Venice. We'd completed our first full week outside in the piazza, a relief, let me tell you, after all those stuffy hours performing from the back of the café, getting in the way of customers wanting to use the staircase. There was quite a breeze that morning, and our brand-new marquee was flapping all around us, but we were all feeling a little bit brighter and fresher, and I guess it showed in our music. But here I am, talking like I'm a regular band member. Actually, I'm one of the gypsies, as the other musicians call us. One of the guys who move around the piazza, helping out whichever of the three café orchestras needs us. Mostly I play here at the Café Lavena, but on a busy afternoon I might do a set with the Quadri boys, go over to the Florian, then back across the square to the Lavena. I get on fine with them all, and with the waiters too. And in any other city I'd have a regular position by now. But in this place, so obsessed with tradition and the past, everything's upside down. Anywhere else, being a guitar player would go in a guy's favor. But here, a guitar. The café managers get uneasy. It looks too modern. The tourists won't like it. Last autumn I got myself a vintage jazz model with an oval sound hole. The kind of thing Django Reinhardt might have played, so there was no way anyone would mistake me for a rock and roller. That made things a little easier. But the café managers, they still don't like it. The truth is, if you're a guitarist, you can be Joe Pass. They still wouldn't give you a regular job in this square. There's also, of course, the small matter of my not being Italian, never mind Venetian. It's the same for that big Czech guy with the alto sax. We're well-liked, we're needed by the other musicians, but we don't quite fit the official bill. Just play and keep your mouth shut. That's what the café managers always say. That way the tourists won't know you're not Italian. Wear your suit, sunglasses, keep the hair combed back. No one will know the difference. Just don't start talking. But I don't do too bad. All three café orchestras, especially when they have to play at the same time from their rival tents, they need a guitar, something soft, solid but amplified, thumping out the chords from the back. I guess you're thinking three bands playing at the same time in the same square. That would sound like a real mess. But the Piazza San Marco's big enough to take it. A tourist strolling across the square will hear one tune fade out, another fade in, like he's shifting the dial on a radio. What tourists can't take too much of is the classical stuff, all these instrumental versions of famous arias. Okay, this is San Marco. They don't want the latest pop hits. But every few minutes they want something they recognize, maybe an old Julie Andrews number or the theme from a famous movie. I remember once last summer going from band to band and playing The Godfather 9 times in one afternoon. Anyway, there we were that spring morning playing in front of a good crowd of tourists, when I saw Tony Gardner sitting alone with his coffee almost directly in front of us, maybe 6 meters back from our marquee. We get famous people in the square all the time. We never make a fuss. At the end of a number, maybe a quiet word will go around the band members. Look, there's Warren Beatty. Look, it's Kissinger. That woman, she's the one who was in the movie about the men who swap their faces. We're used to it. This is the Piazza San Marco, after all. But when I realized it was Tony Gardner sitting there, that was different. I did get excited. Tony Gardner had been my mother's favorite. Back home, back in the communist days, it had been really hard to get records like that, but my mother had pretty much his whole collection. Once, when I was a boy, I scratched one of those precious records. The apartment was so cramped, and a boy my age, you just had to move around sometimes, especially during those cold months when you couldn't go outside. So I was playing this game, jumping from our little sofa to the armchair. And one time I misjudged it and hit the record player. The needle went across the record with a zip. This was long before CDs. And my mother came in from the kitchen and began shouting at me. I felt so bad, not just because she was shouting at me, but because I knew it was one of Tony Gardner's records, and I knew how much it meant to her. And I knew that this one, too, would now have those popping noises going through it while he crooned those American songs. Years later, when I was working in Warsaw, and I got to know about black market records, I gave my mother replacements of all her worn-out Tony Gardner albums, including that one I scratched. It took me over 3 years, but I kept getting them one by one, and each time I went back to see her, I'd bring her another. So you see why I got so excited when I recognized him barely 6 meters away. At first I couldn't quite believe it, and I might have been a beat late with the chord change. Tony Gardner! What would my dear mother have said if she'd known? For her sake, for the sake of her memory, I had to go and say something to him, never mind if the other musicians laughed and said I was acting like a bellboy. But of course I couldn't just rush over to him, pushing aside the tables and chairs. There was a set to finish. It was agony, I can tell you. Another 3, 4 numbers, and every second I thought he was about to get up and walk off. But he kept sitting there by himself, staring into his coffee, stirring it like he was really puzzled by what the waiter had brought him. He looked like any other American tourist, dressed in a pale blue polo shirt and loose grey trousers. His hair, very dark, very shiny on those record covers, was almost white now, but there was still plenty of it, and it was immaculately groomed in the same style he'd had back then. When I'd first spotted him, he'd had his dark glasses in his hand. I doubt if I'd have recognized him otherwise. But as our set went on and I kept watching him, he put them on his face, took them off again, then back on again. He looked preoccupied, and it disappointed me to see he wasn't really listening to our music. Then our set was over. I hurried out of the tent without saying anything to the others, made my way to Tony Gardner's table, then had a moment's panic, not knowing how to start the conversation. I was standing behind him, but some sixth sense made him turn and look up at me. I guess it was all those years of having fans come up to him. And next thing I was introducing myself, explaining how much I admired him, how I was in the band he'd just been listening to, how my mother had been such a fan, all in one big rush. He listened with a grave expression, nodding every few seconds like he was my doctor. I kept talking, and all he said every now and then was, "Is that so?" After a while I thought it was time to leave, and I'd started to move away when he said, "So you come from one of those communist countries. That must have been tough." "That's all in the past." I did a cheerful shrug. "We're a free country now. A democracy.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?